Sure, he had it in his wallet. I don't like Barris, Donna said as she drove, and I don't trust him. You know, he's crazy, and when you're around him, you're crazy too. And then, when you're not around him, you're okay. You're crazy right now.
I am, he said, startled.
Yes, Donna said calmly.
Well, he said, Jesus.
He did not know what to say to that, especially since Donna was never wrong.
Hey, Donna said with enthusiasm. Could you take me to a rock concert at the Anaheim Stadium next week, could you?
Right on, he said mechanically. And then it flashed on him what Donna had said, asking him to take her out.
All right, he said, pleased. Life flowed back into him.
Once again, the little dark-haired chick whom he loved so much had restored him to caring.
Oh, which night?
Well, it's Sunday afternoon. I'm going to bring some of that oily dark hash and get really loaded.
They won't know the difference. There'll be thousands of heads there.
She glanced at him critically. But you got to wear something neat, not those funky clothes you sometimes put on. I mean, her voice softened. I want you to look foxy because you are foxy.
Okay, he said, charmed.
I'm taking us to my place, Donna said
as she shot along through the night in her little car.
And you do have the money, and you will give it to me, and then we'll drop a few of the tabs and kick back and get really mellow. And maybe you'd like to buy us a fifth of Southern Comfort and we can get bombed as well.
Oh, wow, he said with sincerity. What I really genuinely want to do tonight, Donna said as she shifted down and swiveled the car onto her own street and into her driveway, is go to a drive-in movie. I bought a paper and read what's on, but I couldn't find anything good except at the Torrance drive-in, but it's already started. It started at 5:30. Bummer.
He examined his watch.
Ah, then we've missed.
No, we could still see most of it. She shot him a warm smile as she stopped the car and shut off the engine.
It's all the Planet of the Apes pictures, all 11 of them. They run from 7:30 p.m. all the way through 8 a.m. tomorrow morning. I'll go to work directly from the drive-in, so I'll have to change now. We'll sit there at the movie loaded and drinking Southern Comfort all night. Wow, can you dig it?
She peered at him hopefully.
All right, he echoed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Donna hopped out and came around to help him open his little door.
When did you last see all the Planet of the Apes pictures?
I saw most of them earlier this year, but then I got sick toward the last ones and I had the split. It was this ham sandwich they vended me there at the drive-in. That really made me mad. I missed the last picture, where they reveal that all the famous people in history, like Lincoln and Nero, were secretly apes, and running all human history from the start. That's why I want to go back now so bad.
She lowered her voice as they walked toward her front door. They burned me by vending that ham sandwich. So what I did, don't rat on me. The next time we went into the drive-in, the one in La Habra, I stuck a bent coin in the slot and a couple more in other vending machines for good measure. Me and Larry Talling. You remember Larry? I was going with him. We bent a whole bunch of quarters and 50-cent pieces using his vise and a big wrench. I made sure all the vending machines were owned by the same firm, of course, and then we fucked up a bunch of them. Practically all of them, if the truth were known.
She unlocked her front door with her key slowly and gravely in the dim light.
It is not good policy to burn you, Donna, he said as they entered her small, neat place.
Don't step on the shag carpet, Donna said.
Well, where'll I step then?
Stand still or on the newspapers.
Donna?
Now don't give me a lot of heavy shit about having to walk on the newspapers. Do you know how much it cost me to get my carpet shampooed?
She stood unbuttoning her jacket.
Thrift, he said, taking off his own coat. French peasant thrift. Do you ever throw anything away? You keep pieces of string too short for any...
Someday, Donna said, shaking her long black hair back as she slid out of her leather jacket.
I'm gonna get married, and I'll need all that that I put away.
When you get married, you need everything there is. Like, we saw this big mirror in the yard next door. It took three of us over an hour to get it over the fence.
Someday...
How much of what you've got put away did you buy? he asked. And how much did you steal?
Buy?
She studied his face uncertainly. What do you mean by buy?
Like when you buy dope, he said.
A dope deal.
Like now,
he got out his wallet.
I give you money, right?
Donna nodded, watching him obediently, actually more out of politeness, but with dignity, with a certain reserve.
And then you hand me a bunch of dope for it, he said, holding out the bills.
What I mean by buy is an extension into the greater world of human business transactions of what we have present now, with us, as dope deals.
I think I see, she said, her large dark eyes placid but alert.
She was willing to learn.
How many, like, when you ripped off that Coca-Cola truck you were tailgating that day, how many bottles of Coke did you rip off? How many crates?
A month's worth, Donna said. For me and my friends.
He glared at her reprovingly.
Well, it's a form of barter, she said.
What do you...
He started to laugh.
What do you give back?
I give of myself.
Now he laughed out loud.
To who? To the driver of the truck, who probably had to make good...
The Coca-Cola company is a capitalist monopoly. No one else can make Coke but them, like the phone company does when you want to phone someone. They're all capitalist monopolies. Do you know,
her dark eyes flashed,
that the formula for Coca-Cola is a carefully guarded secret handed down through the ages, known only to a few persons all in the same family, and when the last of them dies that's memorized the formula, there will be no more Coke.
So there's a backup written formula in a safe somewhere, she added meditatively.
I wonder where.
She ruminated to herself, her eyes flickering.
You and your rip-off friends will never find the Coca-Cola formula, not in a million years.
Who the fuck wants to manufacture Coke anyhow when you can rip it off their trucks?
They got a lot of trucks.
I mean, you see them driving constantly, real slow.
I tailgate them every chance I get.
Makes them mad.
She smiled. A secret, cunning, lovely little impish smile at him, as if trying to beguile him into her strange reality, where she tailgated and tailgated a slow truck and got madder and madder and more impatient, and then, when it pulled off, instead of shooting on by like other drivers would, she pulled off too, and stole everything the truck had on it. Not so much because she was a thief, or even for revenge, but because by the time it finally pulled off, she had looked at the crates of Coke so long that she had figured out what she could do with all of them. Her impatience had returned to ingenuity. She had loaded her car, not the MG, but the larger Camaro she had been driving then before she had totaled it, with crates and crates of Coke, and then for a month, she and all her jerk friends had drunk all the free Coke they wanted to. And then after that... She had turned the empties back in at different stores for the deposits.
What did you do with the bottle caps? He once asked her.
Did you wrap them in muslin and store them away in your cedar chest?
I threw them away, Donna said glumly.
There's nothing you can do with Coke bottle caps. There's no contests or anything anymore.
Now she disappeared into the other room, returned presently with several polyethylene bags.
You want to count these? She inquired.
There's 1,000 for sure. I weighed them on my gram scale before I paid for them.
It's okay, he said.
He accepted the bags, and she accepted the money, and he thought, Donna, once more I could send you up, but I probably never will, no matter what you do, even if you do it to me, because there is something wonderful and full of life about you and sweet, and I would never destroy it.
I don't understand it, but there it is.
Could I have 10? She asked.
Oh, 10? 10 tabs back? Sure.
He opened one of the bags. It was hard to untie, but he had the skill, and counted her out precisely 10, and then 10 for himself, and retied the bag, and then carried all the bags to his coat in the closet.
You know what they do in cassette tape stores now?
Donna said energetically when he returned. The 10 tabs were nowhere in sight. She had already stashed them.
Regarding tapes?
They arrest you, he said, if you steal them.
No, they always did that.
Now what they do, You know when you carry an LP or a tape to the counter and the clerk removes the little price tag that's gummed on? Well, guess what? Guess what I found out almost the hard way? She threw herself down in a chair, grinning in anticipation, and brought forth a foil-wrapped tiny cube, which he identified as a fragment of hash even before she had unwrapped it. That isn't only a gummed-on price sticker. There's also a tiny fragment of some kind of alloy in it. And if that sticker isn't removed by the clerk at the counter and you try to get out through the door with it, then an alarm goes off. How did you find out almost the hard way? Some teeny bopper tried to walk out with one under her coat ahead of me, and the alarm went off and they grabbed her and the pigs came. How many did you have under your coat?
3.
Did you also have dope in your car? He said. Because once they got you for the tape ripoff, they'd impound your car because you'd be downtown looking out, and the car would be routinely towed away, and then they'd find the dope and send you up for that, too. I'll bet that wasn't locally, either. I'll bet you did that where... He had started to say, where you don't know anybody in law enforcement who would intervene, but he could not say that, because he meant himself. Were Donna ever busted, at least where he had any pull, he would work his ass off to help her. But he could do nothing, say, up in L.A. County. And if it ever happened, which eventually it would, there it would happen, too far off for him to hear or help. He had a scenario start rolling in his head then, a horror fantasy. Donna, much like Luckman, dying with no one hearing or caring or doing anything. They might hear, but they, like Barris, would remain impassive and inert until for her it was all over. She would not literally die, as Luckman had. Had, he meant might. But she, being an addict to Substance D, would not only be in jail, but she would have to withdraw cold turkey. And since she was dealing, not just using, and there was a rap for theft as well, she would be in for a while, and a lot of other things, dreadful things, would happen to her. So when she came back out, she would be a different Donna. The soft, careful expression that he dug so much, the warmth, that would be altered into God knew what. Anyhow, something empty and too much used. Donna translated into a thing, and so it went for all of them someday. But for Donna, he hoped, far and away beyond his own lifetime. And not where he couldn't help. Spunky, he said to her now unhappily, without Spooky. What's that? After a moment she understood. Oh, the TA therapy. But when I do hash? She'd gotten out her very own little round ceramic hash pipe, like a sand dollar, which she had made herself and was lighting it. Then I'm sleepy. Gazing up at him, bright-eyed and happy, she laughed and extended to him the precious hash pipe. I'll supercharge you, she declared. Sit down. As he seated himself, she rose to her feet, stood puffing the hash pipe into lively activity, then waddled at him, bent. And as he opened his mouth, like a baby bird, he thought, as he always thought when she did this, she exhaled great, gray, forceful jets of hash smoke into him, filling him with her own hot and bold and incorrigible energy, which was at the same time a pacifying agent that relaxed and mellowed them both out together. She who supercharged, and Bob Arctor who received. I love you, Donna, he said. This supercharging? This was the substitute for sexual relations with her that he got. And maybe it was better. It was worth so much. It was so intimate and very strange viewed that way. Because first she could put something inside him, and then, if she wanted, he put something into her. An even exchange back and forth until the hash ran out.
Yeah, I can dig it. You're being in love with me, she said, chuckled, sat down beside him, grinning, to take a hit from the hash pipe now, for herself.
Chapter 9. Hey, Donna, man, he said. Do you like cats? She blinked, red-eyed.
Dripping little things, moving along about a foot above the ground.
Above? No, on the ground.
Drippy, behind furniture.
Little spring flowers, then, he said.
Yes, she said, I can dig it. Little spring flowers with yellow in them, when first come up.
And before, he said, Before anyone. Yes, she nodded, eyes shut, off on her trip. Before anyone stops them and they're gone. You know me, he said. You can read me. She lay back, setting down the hash pipe. It had gone out. No more, she said, and her smile slowly dwindled away. What's wrong, he said. Nothing. She shook her head, and that was all. Can I put my arms around you, he said. I want to hold you, okay? Hug you, like, okay? Her dark, enlarged, unfocused, weary eyes opened. No, she said. No, you're too ugly. What? He said. No, she said sharply now. I snort a lot of coke. I have to be super careful because I snort a lot of coke. Ugly? He echoed, furious at her. Fuck you, Donna. Just leave my body alone, she said, staring at him. Sure, he said. Sure. He got to his feet and backed away. You better believe it. He felt like going out to his car, getting his pistol from the glove compartment and shooting her face off, bursting her skull and eyes to bits. And then that passed, that hash hate and fury. Fuck it, he said dismally. I don't like people to grope my body, Donna said. I have to watch out for that because I do so much coke. Someday, I have it planned. I'm going over the Canadian border with 4 pounds of coke in it, in my snatch. I'll say I'm a Catholic and a virgin. Where are you going? Alarm had her now. She half rose. I'm taking off, he said. Your car is at your place. I drove you. The girl struggled up, tousled and confused and half asleep, wandered toward the closet to get her leather jacket. I'll drive you back, but you can see why I have to protect my snatch. 4 pounds of coke is worth... No fucking way, he said. You're too stoned to drive 10 feet, and you never fucking let anybody else drive that little roller skate of yours. Facing him, she yelled wildly. That's because nobody else can fucking drive my car. Nobody else ever gets it right. No man especially. Driving or anything else. You had your hands down into my... And then he was somewhere outside in the darkness, roaming, without his coat, in a strange part of town. Nobody with him. Fucking alone, he thought. And then he heard Donna hurrying along after him, trying to catch up with him, panting for breath, because she did so much pot and hash these days that her lungs were half silted up with resins. He halted, stood without turning, waiting, feeling really down. Approaching him, Donna slowed, panted. I am dreadfully sorry I've hurt your feelings by what I said. I was out of it. Yeah, he said. Too ugly. Sometimes when I've worked all day and I'm super, super tired, the first hit I take just spaces me. You want to come back or what? You want to go to the drive-in? What about the Southern Comfort? I can't buy it. They won't sell it to me, she said and paused. I'm underage, right? Okay, he said. Together they walked back. Well, that sure is good hash, isn't it? Donna said. Bob Arctor said, it's black, sticky hash, which means it's saturated with opium alkaloids. What you're smoking is opium, not hash. Do you know that? That's why it costs so much. Do you know that? He heard his voice rise. He stopped walking. You aren't doing hash, sweetie. You're doing opium. And that means a lifetime habit at a cost of, what's hash selling for now, a pound? And you'll be smoking and nodding off and nodding off and not being able to get your car in gear and rear-ending trucks and needing it every day before you go to work. I need to now, Donna said. Take a hit before I go to work. And at noon and as soon as I get home. That's why I deal, to buy my hash. Hash is mellow. Hash is where it's at. Opium, he repeated. What's hash sell for now? About $10,000 a pound, Donna said. The good kind. Christ, as much as smack. Oh, I would never use a needle. I never have, and I never will. You last about 6 months when you start shooting, whatever you shoot, even tap water. You get a habit. You have a habit. Donna said, we all do. You take substance D, so what? What's the difference now? I'm happy. Aren't you happy? I get to come home and smoke high-grade hash every night. It's my trip. Don't try to change me. Don't ever try to change me, me or my morals. I am what I am, and I get off on a hash. It's my life. You ever see pictures of an old opium smoker? Like in China in the old days, or a hash smoker in India now, what they look like later on in life? Donna said, I don't expect to live long. So what? I don't want to be around long. Do you? Why? What's in this world? And have you ever seen... Shit, what about Jerry Fabian? Look at someone too far into substance D. What's there really in this world, Bob? It's a stopping place to the next where they punish us here because we were born evil. You are a Catholic. We're being punished here. So if we can get off on a trip now and then, fuck it. Do it. The other day, I almost cashed in driving my MG to work. I had the A-Trek stereo on and I was smoking my hash pipe and I didn't see this old dude in an 84 Ford Imperator. You are dumb, he said. Super dumb. I am, you know, gonna die early. Anyhow, whatever I do, probably on the freeway. I got hardly any brakes on my MG, you realize that? And I've picked up 4 speeding tickets this year already. Now I gotta go to traffic school. It's a bummer for 6 whole months. So someday, he said, I will all of a sudden never lay eyes on you again, right? Never again. Because of traffic school? No, after the 6 months, in the marble orchard, he explained. Wiped out, before you're allowed under California law, fucking goddamn California law, to purchase a can of beer or a bottle of booze. Yeah, Donna exclaimed, alerted. The Southern Comfort. Right on. Are we gonna do a fifth of Southern Comfort and take in the ape flicks? Are we? There's still like, why, 8 left, including the one... Listen to me, Bob Arctor said, taking hold of her by the shoulder. She instinctively pulled away. No, she said. He said, you know what they ought to let you do one time? Maybe just one time? Let you go in legally, just once, and buy a can of beer. Why, she said wonderingly. A present to you because you were good, he said. They served me once. Donna exclaimed in delight. At a bar. The cocktail waitress? I was dressed up and, like, with some people. Asked me what I wanted, and I said, I'll have a vodka Collins. And she served me. It was at the La Paz, too, which is a really neat place. Wow, can you believe it? I memorized that. The vodka Collins from an ad. So if I ever got asked at a bar like that, I'd sound cool, right? She suddenly put her arm through his and hugged him as they walked, something she almost never did. It was the most all-time super trip of my life. Then I guess, he said, you have your present, your one present. Eh, I can dig it, Donna said. I can dig it. Of course, they told me later, these people I was with, I should have ordered a Mexican drink like a tequila sunrise because, see, it's a Mexican kind of bar there with the La Paz restaurant. Next time I'll know that. I got that taped in my memory banks if I go there again. You know what I'm going to do someday, Bob? I'm going to move north to Oregon and live in the snow. I'm going to shovel snow off the front walk every morning and have a little house and garden with vegetables. He said, well, you have to save up for that. Save all your money. It costs. Glancing at him, suddenly shy, Donna said, he'll get me that. What's his name? Who? Well, you know. Her voice was soft, sharing her secret, imparting to him because he, Bob Arctor, was her friend and she could trust him. Mr. Wright, I know what he'll be like. He'll drive an Aston Martin and he'll take me north in it. And that's where the little old-fashioned house will be in the snow, north from here. After a pause, she said, snow's supposed to be nice, isn't it? He said, Don't you know? Well, I never have been in the snow, except once in San Bredou up in those mountains, and then it was half sleet and muddy and I fucking fell. I don't mean snow like that. I mean real snow. Bob Arctor, his heart heavy in a certain way, said, You feel positive about all this? It'll really happen? Well, it'll happen, she nodded. It's in the cards for me. They walked on then in silence, back to her place to get her MG. Donna, wrapped up in her own dreams and plans. And he recalled Barris, and he recalled Luckman, and Hank, and the safe apartment, and he recalled Fred. Hey, man, he said, can I go with you to Oregon when you do take off finally? She smiled at him, gently and with acute tenderness, with the answer no. And he understood from knowing her that she meant it, and it would not change. He shivered. Are you cold? She asked. Yeah, he said, very cold. I got that good MG heater in my car, she said, for when we're at the drive-in. You're warm up there. She took his hand, squeezed it, held it, and then, all at once, she let it drop. But the actual touch of her lingered inside his heart. That remained. In all the years of his life ahead, the long years without her, with never seeing her or hearing from her or knowing anything about her, if she was alive or happy or dead or what, that touch stayed locked within him, sealed in himself, and never went away. That one touch of her hand. He brought a cute little needle freak named Connie home with him that night to ball her in exchange for him giving her a bag of 10 Mex hits. Skinny and lank-haired, the girl sat on the edge of his bed, combing her odd hair. This was the first time she had ever come along with him. He had met her at a head party, and he knew very little about her, although he'd carried her phone number for weeks. Being a needle freak, she was naturally frigid, but this wasn't a downer. It made her indifferent to sex in terms of her own enjoyment, but on the other hand, she didn't mind what sort of sex it was. This was obvious just watching her. Connie sat half-dressed, her shoes off, a bobby pin in her mouth, gazing off listlessly, evidently doing a private trip in her head. Her face, elongated and bony, had a strength to it. Probably, he decided, because the bones, especially the jaw lines, were pronounced. On her right cheek was a zit. Undoubtedly, she neither cared about nor noticed that, either. Like sex, zits meant little to her. Maybe she couldn't tell the difference. Maybe, to her, a long-time needle freak, sex and zits had similar or even identical qualities. What a thought, he thought, this glimpse into a hype's head for a moment. Do you have a toothbrush I can use? Connie said. She had begun to nod a little and to mumble, as hypes tended to do at this time of night. Screw it. Teeth are teeth. I'll brush them and. Her voice had sunk so low he couldn't hear her, although he knew from the movement of her lips that she was droning on. Do you know where the bathroom is? He asked her. What bathroom? In this house. Rousing herself, she resumed reflexively calming. Who are those guys out there this late, rolling joints and rattling on and on? They live here with you, I guess. Yeah, sure they do. Guys like that must. Two of them do, Arctor said. Her dead codfish eyes turned to fix their gaze on him. You queer? Connie asked. I try not to be. That's why you're here tonight. Are you putting up a pretty good battle against it? You better believe it. Connie nodded. Yes, I suppose I'm about to find out. If you're, a latent gay, you won't want me to take the initiative. All right, lie down and I'll do you. You want me to, undress you? Okay, you just lie there and I'll do it all. She reached for his zipper. Later in the semi-darkness, he drowsed from, so to speak, his own fix. Connie snored on beside him, lying on her back with her arms at her sides outside the covers. He could see her dimly. They sleep like Count Dracula, he thought. Junkies do. Staring straight up until all of a sudden they sit up, like a machine cranked from position A to position B.
It must be day, the junkie says.
Or anyhow, the tape in his head says. Plays him his instructions, the mind of a junkie being like the music you hear on a clock radio. It sometimes sounds pretty, but it is only there to make you do something. The music from the clock radio is to wake you up. The music from the junkie is to get you to become a means for him to obtain more junk, in whatever way you can serve. He, a machine, will turn you into his machine. Every junkie, he thought, is a recording. Again he dozed, meditating about these bad things. And eventually the junkie, if it's a chick, has nothing to sell but her body. Like Connie, he thought. Connie right here. Opening his eyes, he turned toward the girl beside him and saw Donna Hawthorne. Instantly he sat up. Donna, he thought. He could make out her face clearly, no doubt. Christ, he thought, and reached for the bedside light. His fingers touched it, the lamp tumbled and fell. The girl, however, slept on. He still stared at her, and then by degrees he saw Connie again. Hatchet-faced, bleak-jawed, sunken, the gaunt face of the out-of-it junkie. Connie and not Donna. One girl, and not the other. He lay back and, miserable, slept somewhat again, wondering what it meant and so forth, and on into darkness. I don't care if he stunk, the girl beside him muttered later on, dreamily in her sleep. I still loved him. He wondered who she meant. A boyfriend? Her father? A tomcat? A childhood precious stuffed toy? Maybe all of them, he thought. But the words were, I loved, not I still love. Evidently he, whatever or whoever he had been, was gone now. Maybe, Arctor reflected, they, whoever they were, had made her throw him out, because he stank so bad. Probably so. He wondered how old she had been then, the remembering, worn-out junkie girl who dozed beside him.